Chapter 23. Miles broad, and to an island they called Amur, and from thence NN. E to Banda. Between these islands we met with a Dutch junk, or vessel, going to Amboina. We took her without much trouble, and I had much ado, to prevent our men murdering all the men, as soon as they heard them say they belonged to Amboina. The reasons I suppose anyone will guess. We took out of her about 16 ton of nutmegs, some provisions, and their small arms, for they had no great guns, and let the ship go. From thence we sailed directly to the Banda Island, or islands, where we were sure to get more nutmegs, if we thought fit. For my part, I would willingly have got more nutmegs, though I had paid for them, but our people abhorred paying for anything. So we got about 12 ton more at several times, most of them from shore, and only a few in a small boat of the natives, which was going to Gilolo. We would have traded openly, but the Dutch, who have made themselves masters of all those islands, forbade the people dealing with us, or any strangers whatever, and kept them so in awe that they durst not do it. So we could indeed have made nothing of it if we had stayed longer, and therefore resolved to be gone for Ternate, and see if we could make up our loading with cloves. Accordingly we stood away north, but found ourselves so entangled among innumerable islands, and without any pilot that understood the channel and races between them, that we were obliged to give it over, and resolved to go back again to Banda, and see what we could get among the other islands thereabouts. The first adventure we made here had like to have been fatal to us all, for the sloop, being ahead, made the signal to us for seeing a sail, and afterwards another, and a third, by which we understood she saw three sail, whereupon we made more sail, to come up with her, but on a sudden, were gotten among some rocks, falling foul upon them in such a manner as frighted us all very heartily, for having, it seems, but just water enough, as it were to an inch, our rudder struck upon the top of a rock, which gave us a terrible shock, and split a great piece off the rudder, and indeed disabled it, so that our ship would not steer at all, at least not so as to be depended upon. And we were glad to hand all our sails, except our foresail and main topsail, and with them, we stood away to the east, to see if we could find any creek or harbor, where we might lay the ship on shore, and repair our rudder. Besides, we found the ship herself had received some damage, for she had some little leak near her stern post, but a great way under water. By this mischance we lost the advantages, whatever they were, of the three sail of ships, which we afterwards came to hear, were small Dutch ships from Batavia, going to Banda and Amboina, to load spice, and, no doubt, had a good quantity of money on board. Upon the disaster I have been speaking of, you may very well suppose that we came to an anchor as soon as we could, which was upon a small island not far from Banda, where, though the Dutch keep no factory, yet they come at the season to buy nutmegs and mace. We stayed there 13 days, but there being no place where we could lay the ship on shore, we sent the sloop to cruise among the islands to look out for a place fit for us. In the meantime we got very good water here, some provisions, roots, and fruits, and a good quantity of nutmegs and mace, which we found ways to trade with the natives for, without the knowledge of their masters, the Dutch. At length our sloop returned. Having found another island, where there was a very good harbor, we ran in, and came to an anchor. We immediately unbent all our sails, sent them ashore upon the island, and set up 7 or 8 tents with them. Then we unrigged our topmasts, and cut them down, hoisted all our guns out, our provisions and loading, and put them ashore in the tents. With the guns we made 2 small batteries, for fear of a surprise, and kept a lookout upon the hill. When we were all ready, we laid the ship aground upon a hard sand, the upper end of the harbor, and shored her up on each side. At low water she lay almost dry, so we mended her bottom, and stopped the leak, which was occasioned by straining some of the rudder irons with the shock which the ship had against the rock. Having done this, we also took occasion to clean her bottom, which, having been at sea so long, was very foul. The sloop washed and tallowed also, but was ready before us, and cruised 8 or 10 days among the islands, but met with no purchase, so that we began to be tired of the place, having little to divert us, but the most furious claps of thunder that ever were heard, or read of in the world. We were in hopes to have met with some purchase here among the Chinese, who, we had been told, came to Ternate to trade for cloves, and to the Banda Isles for nutmegs, and we would have been very glad to have loaded our galleon, or great ship, with these two sorts of spice, and have thought it a glorious voyage, but we found nothing stirring more than what I have said, except Dutchmen, who, by what means we could not imagine, had either a jealousy of us, or intelligence of us, and kept themselves close in their ports. I was once resolved to have made a descent at the island of Dumas, the place most famous for the best nutmegs, but friend William, who was always for doing our business without fighting, dissuaded me from it, and gave such reasons for it, that we could not resist, particularly the great heats of the season, and of the place, for we were now in the latitude of just half a degree south. But while we were disputing this point, we were soon determined by the following accident. We had a strong gale of wind at SW/W, and the ship at fresh way, but a great sea rolling in upon us from the NE, which we afterwards found, was the pouring in of the great ocean east of New Guinea. However, as I said, we stood away large, and made fresh way, when, on the sudden, from a dark cloud which hovered over our heads, came a flash, or rather blast, of lightning, which was so terrible, and quivered so long among us, that not I only, but all our men, thought the ship was on fire. The heat of the flash, or fire, was so sensibly felt in our faces, that some of our men, had blisters raised by it on their skins, not immediately, perhaps, by the heat, but by the poisonous or noxious particles which mixed themselves with the matter inflamed. But this was not all. The shock of the air, which the fracture in the clouds made, was such that our ship shook as when a broadside is fired, and her motion being checked, as it were at once, by a repulse superior to the force that gave her way before, the sails all flew back in a moment, and the ship lay, as we might truly say, thunderstruck. As the blast from the cloud was so very near us, it was but a few moments after the flash that the terriblest clap of thunder followed that was ever heard by mortals. I firmly believe a blast of 100,000 barrels of gunpowder could not have been greater to our hearing. Nay, indeed, to some of our men it took away their hearing. It is not possible for me to describe, or anyone to conceive, the terror of that minute. Our men were in such a consternation that not a man on board the ship had presence of mind to apply to the proper duty of a sailor, except friend William, and had he not run very nimbly, and with a composure that I am sure I was not master of, to let go the foresheet, set in the weather brace of the foreyard, and haul down the topsails, we had certainly brought all our masts by the board, and perhaps have been overwhelmed in the sea. As for myself, I must confess my eyes were open to my danger, though not the least to anything of application for remedy. I was all amazement and confusion, and this was the first time that I can say I began to feel the effects of that horror which I know, since much more of, upon the just reflection on my former life. I thought myself doomed by heaven to sink that moment into eternal destruction. And with this peculiar mark of terror, viz., that the vengeance was not executed in the ordinary way of human justice, but that God had taken me into his immediate disposing, and had resolved to be the executor of his own vengeance. Let them alone describe the confusion I was in who know what was the case of John, Child, of Shadwell, or Francis Spira. It is impossible to describe it. My soul was all amazement and surprise. I thought myself just sinking into eternity, owning the divine justice of my punishment, but not at all feeling any of the moving, softening tokens of a sincere penitent, afflicted at the punishment, but not at the crime, alarmed at the vengeance, but not terrified at the guilt, having the same gust to the crime, though terrified to the last degree at the thought of the punishment, which I concluded I was just now going to receive. But perhaps many that read this will be sensible of the thunder and lightning, that may think nothing of the rest, or rather may make a jest of it all. So I say no more of it at this time, but proceed to the story of the voyage. When the amazement was over, and the men began to come to themselves, they fell a calling for one another, every one for his friend, or for those he had most respect for, and it was a singular satisfaction to find that nobody was hurt. The next thing was to inquire if the ship had received no damage, when the boatswain, stepping forward, found that part of the head was gone, but not so as to endanger the bowsprit. So we hoisted our topsails again, hauled aft the foresheet, braced the yards, and went our course as before. Nor can I deny, but that we were all somewhat like the ship, our first astonishment being a little over, and that we found the ship swim again. We were soon the same irreligious, hardened crew that we were before, and I among the rest. As we now steered, our course lay NNE, and we passed thus, with a fair wind, through the straighter channel between the island of Gilolo and the land of Nova Guinea, when we were soon in the open sea or ocean, on the southeast of the Philippines, being the great Pacific, or South Sea, where it may be said to join itself with the vast Indian Ocean. As we passed into these seas, steering due north, so we soon crossed the line to the north side, and so sailed on towards Mindanao and Manila, the chief of the Philippine Islands, without meeting with any purchase till we came to the northward of Manila, and then our trade began. For here we took three Japanese vessels, though at some distance from Manila. Two of them had made their market, and were going home with nutmegs, cinnamon, cloves, and sea besides all sorts of European goods, brought with the Spanish ships from Acapulco. They had together 8 and 30 ton of cloves, and 5 or 6 ton of nutmegs, and as much cinnamon. We took the spice, but meddled with very little of the European goods, they being, as we thought, not worth our while. But we were very sorry for it soon after, and therefore grew wiser upon the next occasion. The third Japanese was the best prize to us, for he came with money, and a great deal of gold and coins, to buy such goods as we mentioned above. We eased him of his gold, and did him no other harm, and having no intention to stay long here, we stood away for China. We were at sea above 2 months upon this voyage, beating it up against the wind, which blew steadily from the NE, and within a point or two one way or other, and this indeed was the reason why we met with the more prizes in our voyage. We were just gotten clear of the Philippines, and we purposed to go to the Isle of Formosa, but the wind blew so fresh at NNE that there was no making anything of it, and we were forced to put back to Laconia, the most northerly of those islands. We rode here very secure, and shifted our situation, not in view of any danger, for there was none, but for a better supply of provisions, which we found the people very willing to supply us with. There lay, while we remained here, 3 very great galleons, or Spanish ships, from the South Seas, whether newly come in or ready to sail we could not understand at first. But as we found the China traders began to load, and set forward to the north, we concluded the Spanish ships had newly unloaded their cargo, and these had been buying, so we doubted not, but we should meet with purchase in the rest of the voyage, neither, indeed, could we well miss of it. We stayed here till the beginning of May, when we were told the Chinese traders would set forward, for the northern monsoons end about the latter end of March or beginning of April, so that they are sure of fair winds home. Accordingly we hired some of the country boats, which are very swift sailors, to go and bring us word how affairs stood at Manila, and when the China junks would sail, and by this intelligence we ordered our matters so well, that 3 days after we set sail we fell in with no less than 11 of them, out of which, however, having by misfortune of discovering ourselves, taken but 3, we contented ourselves, and pursued our voyage to Formosa. And these three vessels we took, in short, such a quantity of cloves, nutmegs, cinnamon, and mace, besides silver, that our men began to be of my opinion that we were rich enough. And, in short, we had nothing to do now but to consider by what methods to secure the immense treasure we had got. I was secretly glad to hear that they were of this opinion, for I had long before resolved, if it were possible, to persuade them to think of returning, having fully perfected my first projected design of rummaging among the Spice Islands, and all those prizes, which were exceeding rich at Manila, was quite beyond my design. But now I had heard what the men said, and how they thought we were very well, I let them know by friend William, that I intended only to sail to the island of Formosa, where I should find opportunity to turn our spices and Europe goods into ready money, and that then I would tack about for the south, the northern monsoons being perhaps by that time also ready to set in. They all approved of my design, and willingly went forward, because, besides the winds, which would not permit until October, to go to the south, I say, besides this, we were now a very deep ship, having near 200 ton of goods on board, and particularly, some very valuable. The sloop also had a proportion. With this resolution we went on cheerfully, when, within about 12 days sail more, we made the island Formosa, at a great distance, but were ourselves shot beyond the southernmost part of the island, being to leeward, and almost upon the coast of China. Here we were a little at a loss, for the English factories were not far off, and we might be obliged to fight some of their ships, if we met with them, which, though we were able enough to do, yet we did not desire it on many accounts, and particularly because we did not think it was our business to have it known who we were, or that such a kind of people as we had been seen on the coast. However, we were obliged to keep to the northward, keeping as good an offing as we could with respect to the coast of China. We had not sailed long, but we chased a small Chinese junk, and having taken her, we found she was bound to the island of Formosa, having no goods on board, but some rice and a small quantity of tea. But she had three Chinese merchants in her, and they told us that they were going to meet a large vessel of their country, which came from Tonquin, and lay in a river in Formosa, whose name I forgot, and they were going to the Philippine Islands, with silks, muslins, calicoes, and such goods as are the product of China, and some gold, that their business was to sell their cargo, and buy spices and European goods. This suited very well with our purpose, so I resolved now that we would leave off being pirates and turn merchants. So we told them what goods we had on board, and that if they would bring their supercargoes or merchants on board, we would trade with them. They were very willing to trade with us, but terribly afraid to trust us. Nor was it an unjust fear, for we had plundered them already of what they had. On the other hand, we were as diffident as they, and very uncertain what to do. But William the Quaker put this matter into a way of barter. He came to me, and told me he really thought the merchants looked like fair men, that meant honestly. And besides, says William, it is their interest to be honest now, for, as they know upon what terms we got the goods we are to truck with them, so they know we can afford good pennyworths. And in the next place, it saves them going the whole voyage, so that the southerly monsoons yet holding, if they traded with us, they could immediately return with their cargo to China. Though, by the way, we afterwards found they intended for Japan. But that was all one, for by this means they saved at least 8 months' voyage. Upon these foundations, William said he was satisfied we might trust them. For, says William, I would as soon trust a man whose interest binds him to be just to me as a man whose principle binds himself. Upon the whole, William proposed that two of the merchants should be left on board our ship as hostages, and that part of our goods should be loaded in their vessel, and let the third go with it into the port where their ship lay. And when he had delivered the spices, he should bring back such things as it was agreed should be exchanged. This was concluded on, and William the Quaker ventured to go along with them, which, upon my word, I should not have cared to have done, nor was I willing that he should, but he went still upon the notion that it was their interest to treat him friendly. In the meantime, we came to an anchor under a little island in the latitude of 23 degrees 28 minutes, being just under the northern tropic, and about 20 leagues from the island. Here we lay 13 days, and began to be very uneasy for my friend William, for they had promised to be back again in 4 days, which they might very easily have done. However, at the end of 13 days, we saw 3 sail coming directly to us, which a little surprised us all at first, not knowing what might be the case, and we began to put ourselves in a posture of defense, but as they came near us, we were soon satisfied, for the first vessel was that which William went in, who carried a flag of truce, and in a few hours they all came to an anchor, and William came on board us with a little boat, with a Chinese merchant in his company, and 2 other merchants, who seemed to be a kind of brokers for the rest. Here he gave us an account, how civilly he had been used, how they had. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.